We've been reading the prayers of Queen Kunti Devi, spoken to Lord Krishna just after the battle of Kurukshetra had concluded and Krishna was preparing to leave Hastinapur, which is relatively close to the place where the battle took place and was the capital of the Pandavas. And he was preparing to leave that city for his home of Dwarka. Kunti Devi's prayers spoke of the difficulty of knowing Krishna, in knowing Krishna, due to the curtain of Maya that covers everyone's eyes, the curtain of forgetfulness, a very, very thick curtain due to Anadya Bahimukh, turning our back on Krishna so very long ago. A misuse of independence a very long time ago. And due to that, we are caught within the reactions of the material world. We are cast into the material energy and forced to suffer the reactions to our deeds enacted with ourself as the center. Kunti Devi then explains how one can get free from that, and that is by becoming a devotee of Krishna. Krishna, although within the material world, is not actually in the material world. He is like a lotus, the water doesn't touch the lotus or the leaves of the lotus. But if one wishes to take shelter of Krishna and actually become Krishna's devotee, one has to rid oneself of one's material attachments, because one cannot love the material world and Krishna at the same time any more than one can keep two swords in the same sheath or start a fire and at the same time pouring water upon it. No, we have to become ekanishta, fixed on one side, and that is the side of pure devotional service if we wish to get free, truly free from the material world. And then in the midst of this, Kunti has explained the benefit that we've been hearing about of having taken shelter of Krishna, and that benefit is protection. But even greater than the fear element in the material world, and even greater than the desire, the natural desire to be free from fear, to always be protected, is Kunti Devi's incredibly pure desire to always keep in the association and the service of Krishna. She prefers that situation where difficulty after difficulty after difficulty befell her as well as the Pandavas to a perfectly opulent situation in which Krishna is not present. And that truly is what she was fearing, because Krishna was on the chariot and preparing to go to Dwarka. We get very clear glimpses of the nature of love here, the nature of love for Krishna. So this Krishna, he is a very mysterious person. Sometimes we take that fully for granted. But yet he is God. He's sitting on the chariot. He's standing upon the altar with his with Balaram's arm resting upon him. But yet, he is so powerful that universes come from his skin holes, and he's the supreme controller of everything. And the entirety of material existence rests upon him, just as... And the Sanskrit? Sutre. What does sutre mean? Thread, money. But one can't see the thread in a pearl necklace. Yes. And if one does have love for Krishna, one sees Krishna everywhere. But yet Krishna's person is very bewildering. And in the last prayers that we heard of Kunti Devi, she's explained, how is it the unborn, he who has no birth, has taken his birth? How is that possible? That he who by definition is eternal, both in the past and future, and he's ever existing and all pervading, how is it that he has taken his birth in a prison no less? Very, very difficult to understand. He is eternal time, the supreme controller, without beginning or end, and yet he's upon the chariot. And he drove the chariot of Arjuna. And if he's the supreme cause, if he's caused everything, does he cause our happiness? Is he the one who causes our happiness? And then we thank God. And then is he the one who causes our distress and we get angry at him? No. That is all to do with karma. The free choices and the entanglement and the reactions of the living entity. Of each living entity is trapped in the material world. But yet, exactly how Krishna acts, what he does, why he does what he does, is very difficult to understand. Very difficult to understand. You're inactive, but yet you take birth, although you are the vital force and unborn. You descend into different species. You come as a fish, matsya, as a turtle. How could God take the form of a turtle? Quite inconceivable. Or a boar, a hog. How can anyone understand this? And yet, he's sitting upon a chariot or he's playing his flute. But still more inconceivable, Kunti explains. More inconceivable than a gigantic hog, Varahadeva, or a gigantic fish named, or a gigantic hog named, is how is it possible that Krishna is in Vrindavan and Mother Yasoda is chastising him and tears are coming from Krishna's eyes? How is that possible? He's afraid of his mother. He's so expert at extracting this vatsalya ras, the sweetness of the motherly exchange with him, that he's the perfect son. This sight, Kunti Devi is saying, is bewildering to me. And the month of Kartik, it demonstrates, because Srimati Radharani is known as Kartiki, it shows how bhakti is even stronger than Krishna. And Srila Jiva Goswami had commented on that particular verse, which was 31, saying, this verse declares to the world the superiority or the primacy of love for Krishna. It even places the supreme controller under control. It brings tears to his eyes when Mother Yasoda is chastised. So for a non-devotee, this is extremely bewildering. Now why does this Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, why does he take his birth? Why does he advent? Why does the unborn take his birth? So the next verse is the next section will address this question. And then after that, Kunti Devi will move into the final elements of her prayers, bringing them to a conclusion. Up to this point, she's more or less just glorified the Lord and spoken about his mysteriousness, but she hasn't asked him for anything other than let miseries and dangers come again and again. What does she really want? She will come to that Not today, or maybe we may start some of those verses today. But as she reaches the conclusions of her prayers, we will hear what her desire actually is. Text 32. Why does Krishna take his birth? 32 to 36 discuss this question. Some say, says Kunti Devi, that the unborn is born for the glorification of pious kings. And others say that he is born to please King Yadu, one of your dearest devotees. You appear in his family as sandalwood appears in the Malaya hills. In Prabhupada's purport, he explains how the Malaya hills have become famous due to the appearance of sandalwood, the sandalwood that is there. And similarly, the Yadu dynasty is so famous because Krishna is Yadava. He is the most prominent member of the Yadu dynasty. And because he took his birth as a Yadu, the Yadava dynasty has become famous. So why did Krishna take birth? We'll discuss some of those points. Prabhupada explains in his purport. We'll read from the beginning. Because the Lord's appearance in this material world is bewildering, as Kunti Devi has just discussed, there are different opinions about the birth of the unborn. In the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says that he takes his birth in the material world, although he is the Lord of all creations, and he is unborn. So there cannot be any denial of the birth of the unborn, because he himself establishes the truth. There are some people who say that the Krishna of the Mahabharata is different from the Krishna of Vrindavan. I've heard Prabhupada speak on this, and he says, they say that the Krishna of the Mahabharata is different from God, the Krishna who is God. So Prabhupada said, but in the Mahabharata, he's declaring in the Bhagavad Gita that he is the Supreme Lord. So how could it possibly be different? So many speculations come up about Krishna. So many people have their opinions. But these opinions are quite authorized. So the unborn actually takes his birth, and there is no denial of that because he himself, Krishna, establishes the truth. But still there are different opinions as to why he takes his birth. That is also declared in the Bhagavad Gita. He appears by his own internal potency to reestablish the principles of religion. Why is it important for us to remember that he appears by his own internal potency? Sambhava yapma mayaya. Why is that an important point, just in general as preaching or... Yes, MP, Madhya Pradesh. Yes, and also? Yes, we are forced. He comes by his own energy. Yeah, same. So his internal energy's business is to facilitate his desire. That's the purpose of the internal energy, to facilitate Krishna's desire. And the external energy is the keeper of the prison for us. That is the mission. So he comes for his mission of protecting the pious and to annihilate the impious. That is the mission of the appearance of the unborn. Still it is said that the Lord is there to glorify the pious King Yudhisthira. Lord Sri Krishna certainly wanted to establish the kingdom of the Pandavas for the good of all in the world. When there is a pious king ruling over the world, the people are happy. When the ruler is impious, the people are unhappy. In the age of Kali, in most cases, the rulers are impious, and therefore the citizens are also continuously unhappy. But in the case of democracy, the impious citizens themselves elect their representative to rule over them, and therefore they cannot blame anyone for their unhappiness. They voted for the person, and as Prabhupada would sometimes say, if the people have a dog-like mentality, they will elect the biggest dog to be the in charge of the government. So therefore, how could anyone complain? They elected him. If they don't like the quality of people, they should find someone of a quality that they do like. And the people don't want to find a person of high integrity because they themselves don't want to be of high integrity. If you tell them that you should elect a person, a purified person who doesn't eat meat, doesn't have illicit sex, doesn't gamble, and doesn't take intoxication at all, they would never vote for that person because that is the essence of their life. And that famous story when the Lord Zetland or someone back in the 1920s asked one of Prabhupada's godbrothers in England, "Can you make me into a brahmana?" Prabhupada's godbrother said, "Yes, no problem. All you have to do, no meat eating, no illicit sex, no gambling, no intoxication." And the reply was, "Impossible. What's the use of being alive then? Because this is the source of pleasure in contemporary society. This is the source of pleasure, the source of happiness, the impetus for life. Impossible." So therefore people can't complain if they elect a rascal, one rascal after another as the leader. It's because they're electing him. We'll just read the last two sentences of Prabhupada's purport. "Therefore the conclusion is that the Lord is ever unborn like the sun." And that's the example we usually use to explain the Lord's birth. "And yet he appears as the sun rises on the eastern horizon. As the sun is never the sun of the eastern horizon, so the Lord is no one's son, but he is the father of everything that be." So two reasons given so far: to glorify pious kings such as Yudhisthira Maharaj. Second reason, to glorify the Yadu dynasty by his taking birth in that dynasty. 33. And these again are also others' opinion. Kunti Devi is explaining these points from the point of view of what people say, but authorized people. "Others say that since both Vasudeva and Devaki prayed for you, you have taken your birth as their son. Undoubtedly, you are unborn, yet you take your birth for their welfare and kill those who are envious of the demigods." Two other reasons there. Due to the sincere, full-hearted prayers of Vasudeva and Devaki, and to kill those who are envious, because the demigods, before Krishna's advent, they prayed for an incarnation because the world was overburdened with sinfulness and the demoniac force, an overwhelming demoniac force, so they prayed for an incarnation. So there's two more reasons. And all these, practically speaking, all these four that I've mentioned are all in reciprocation with devotees. So ultimately, the point is being brought out, practically speaking, that Krishna is reciprocating with his devotees. Text 34. "Others say, being overburdened like a boat at sea, like a boat at sea is much aggrieved. And that Brahma, that the world, excuse me, being overburdened like a boat at sea is much aggrieved. And that Brahma, who is your son, prayed for you, and so you have appeared to diminish the trouble." Bhumi had come. And what form had she taken? The form of a cow. And she had prayed and got Lord Brahma to pray for the incarnation of the Lord to come. We'll read from the end of Prabhupada's word here. "Whenever there is trouble in the universe that cannot be solved by the administrative demigods, they approach Brahmaji for a solution. And if it is not to be solved even by Brahmaji, then Brahmaji consults and prays to the Kiradakshai Vishnu for an incarnation and solution to the problems. Such a problem arose when Kamsa and others were ruling over the earth, and the earth became too much overburdened by the misdeeds of the Asuras. Brahmaji, along with other demigods, prayed at the shore of the Kiradaka ocean, and they were advised of the descent of Krishna as the son of Vasudeva and Devaki. So some people say that the Lord appeared because of the prayers of Brahmaji. And yet others say that you appeared to rejuvenate the devotional service of hearing, remembering, worshipping, and so on, in order that the conditioned souls suffering from material pangs might take advantage and gain liberation. So how does Krishna's appearance rejuvenate devotional service? How? Prabhupada will explain the process of religion, the actual process of religion and of becoming religious. And once one remembers that point, then how Krishna's appearance rejuvenates this is obvious. Prabhupada's purport. In the Srimad Bhagavad Gita, the Lord asserts that he appears in every millennium just to reestablish the way of religion. The way of religion, so what's the verse? No one can manufacture a new path of religion, as is the fashion for certain ambitious persons. The factual way of religion is to accept the Lord as the supreme authority and thus render service unto him in spontaneous love. A living being cannot help but render service because he is constitutionally made for that purpose. The only function of the living being is to render service to the Lord. The Lord is great, and living beings are subordinate to him. Therefore, the duty of the living being is just to serve him only. And how should that service be done? Said in the beginning of the purport, close to the beginning. Spontaneous love. Natural. Spontaneous means that it's natural. It's coming naturally from the heart. And if we don't spontaneously love Krishna, we will either become very, very dry, or we will spontaneously love someone of the material world. Possibly our pet dog or pet horse or possibly our family members. Or our country or something. There are many children, they're not children anymore, but born in the late 1940s or in India with the name Deshbhakta. Do you know anyone by the name of Deshbhakta? Did you ever hear of that name? Yes, so many. What does that mean? A devotee of my country. A spontaneous lover of my country. But spontaneous love and bhakti is actually meant and is natural when the soul... The duty of every living being is just to serve him only. Is this difficult to accept? No. You are a fortunate soul. Yes, it's true. How easily he said, it's not difficult to accept. Unfortunately, the illusion living beings, out of misunderstanding only, become servants of the senses by material desire. This desire is called avidya or nescience. And out of such desire, the living being makes different plans for material enjoyment centered about a perverted sex life. He therefore becomes entangled in the chain of birth and death by transmigrating into different bodies on different planets under the direction of the Supreme Lord. Unless, therefore, one is beyond the boundary of this nescience, one cannot get free from the threefold miseries of material life. That is the law of nature. So Prabhupada has painted a picture here of what the natural condition of the living entity is, which is to serve Krishna in spontaneous love, and what the perverted, reflected condition of the living entity is. Not to serve Krishna, but to serve falsely, to serve the body and everything connected to the body. And the result of that is birth and death repeatedly. So how can... So there have been two parts of the presentation so far. The first part is the natural condition of the living entity. Second part is the bound condition of the living entity. So how can the living entity, a human being, move from the bound condition to the free, spontaneous condition, his natural condition? That is called religion. So the Lord, however, out of His causeless mercy, because He is more merciful to the suffering living beings than they can expect, appears before them and renovates the principles of devotional service, comprised of hearing, chanting, remembering, serving, worshipping, praying, cooperating, and surrendering unto Him. This is called Navanga Bhakti. And who speaks of Navanga Bhakti? Huh? Prahlad Maharaj. In what canto? Yes. Prahlad Maharaj is so wonderful. He's so fearless. His father speaks to him. His father is the heaviest person in the universe. And he's just a young boy. And his father has the entire universe subjugated. And even Narada Muni is forced to pay obeisances. And almost all the demigods except the topmost demigods, are forced to bow to him. And yet, when this heaviest person asks Prahlad, what is the best thing that you have learned in school? Prahlad will answer with this, the best thing of Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam. Fearlessly, not arrogantly even. How is that possible, to be so fearless? It's interesting to note, of course, that Prahlad was a young boy. And a simple young boy, a child. And one has to be like that. He had that simple childish faith that Krishna was there to protect him. It was based on his experience. There are some wonderful verses about Prahlad that describe his consciousness. So sweet how he would, when Krishna, he would be seeing Krishna, and then Krishna would disappear from his sight, and what would he do? He would cry and cry. Just like a child, when you take something away from him that he's attached to, he cries. And then when Krishna would come back, he would laugh and laugh and laugh. He was always seeing Krishna in front of him. He had that simplicity and purity. Perhaps we also have to become simple and pure, like a child in that sense. Have that simplicity of faith. And simplicity of faith and simplicity of heart, Sarala, is very difficult in Kali Yuga. Because the Maya will give so many reasons that you can see with your eyes, that you can touch, why you should not have simplicity of heart and simplicity of faith. Maya will provide all those to you. Like the child, when he's walking across a busy intersection and he's holding on to the hand of his father, he has no fear, even though there is danger everywhere. Really, he's in a dangerous condition, but all he knows is my father is holding on to me, I'm holding on to my father. So by hearing, so the Lord comes, out of His causeless mercy, He appears before them and renovates the principles of devotional service, comprised of hearing, chanting, remembering, serving, worshipping, praying, cooperating, and surrendering unto
Adoption of all the above mentioned items or any one of them can help a conditioned soul get out of the tangle of nescience and thus become liberated from all material sufferings created by the living being, illusioned by the external energy. Now there's one more line in the purport that begins, this particular type of mercy. Now which particular type of mercy? In the last line, this particular type of mercy, which particular type of mercy is bestowed upon the living being in the form of, by the Lord in the form of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? Which particular type of mercy? Causeless mercy. But what is the causeless mercy? But what is Prabhupada just speaking about? Yes, the Lord comes to rejuvenate the process of religion, devotional service. He comes to display his pastimes and his activities. Now, what does that have to do with hearing and chanting? And that's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you mean? Okay. But now, when the Lord comes as Krishna, what Kunti Devi is speaking, what does that have to do with hearing and chanting? A silly question, but sorry, but I don't expect a silly answer. Yes, so many pastimes and activities that we should hear and chant about and remember. And if we don't do that, then we will dry up. Yes. Prabhupada once, I heard him actually, personally, I heard him say that, talking about book distribution, and he wasn't, of course, saying anything negative about book distribution, but he was saying that it is not an export business. What did Prabhupada mean by that? It is not simply an export business. Huh? Yes. What's an export business? In other words, the goods come to you. You don't use them. You don't see them. You don't touch them. You don't do anything with them, take advantage of them. But you're just a stopping point to sell them to someone else. But no. And he even said at that, close to that time, that my only criticism of the devotees is I think my books are for distribution, not for reading. But now that criticism isn't even appropriate because now the devotees don't even so much think they're for distribution. What to speak of for reading, it's too hard. And yet Prabhupada said the purports were his ecstasies. And yet everyone will say, Jai Prabhupada, Jai Prabhupada, Jai Prabhupada. But who is this Prabhupada? He explains here. And we hear in his lecture. So then the next point is this particular type of mercy of the facility of hearing and chanting, actual religion. Now how will that get us out? How will that change us from being in the material world bound, a bound living entity, to the other side? To become free to serve the Lord in spontaneous love. How does this process of religion work? Yes, that's 100% true and also a mystical explanation. But what else too? Yes. More detail on that though. What? We will get an impetus. What will give us an impetus? Okay, and it's also somewhat abstract. What will give us an impetus? Well, think practically. If you hear and chant, what gives you impetus? Yeah, that's one thing. That's the when you hear and chant, say this is the process of religion. He said, hearing how Krishna relates with his devotees. Taste, yeah, that was also said, and I let it go too quickly, yes. Taste,
a taste in chanting Hare Krishna. When I had the fortune of seeing Bhakti Vrinda Govinda Maharaj yesterday. He was here. He stopped by for a few hours yesterday. And he told me that he's been going around to different temples, possibly mostly in Russia, and just having long kirtans. And it's bringing, he said that the devotees come to life. It's like plants without water. Shravanadi Jal, Kaviraj Goswami, said, Ihan Mali Nitya Sechi, the Mali, the gardener who wishes to take care of his devotional creeper, his devotional service, who wishes it to grow. Sechi Nitya, regularly water it, this creeper, with Shravanadi Jal. That means Shravanam, hearing and chanting and all these other processes of devotional service. If we don't do that, our religion will die. There won't be a religion. So this particular type of mercy is bestowed upon the living being of how to perform this devotional service. It is bestowed upon the living being by the Lord in the form of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. What does that mean? So someone said that he showed the example. Well, what was his example? Yeah, he preached. In the different parts of his life, he did different things. Before he took initiation, he was just a student and a scholar. Brilliant, brilliant. But he didn't really associate with the devotees, although the devotees loved him. But as soon as he took initiation, he changed completely. Did you ever hear that prayer written by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur about Mahaprabhu? It starts with a description of him when he came, coming back from Gaya after initiation. Did anyone ever hear that prayer? It's so wonderful. I should bring it. I have it somewhere. You have that? What to do? It's so sweet. So sweet. So after initiation, what did Mahaprabhu do? He started the Sankirtan movement. He was a householder, yes? What did he do? He preached in his area, because a householder can't go all over the world and be traveling as if he was a sannyasi. No. He stayed in his area and he started the Sankirtan movement in Navadvip. And they would chant and dance and chant and dance. And he sent out his people, Nityananda and Haridas, tell everyone to chant Hare Krishna, to follow Bolo Krishna, Bhajai Krishna, Koro Krishna, Sika. Follow Krishna's instructions. Just stayed there. So Mahaprabhu was the ideal preacher of Bhagavatam. And then after some time, when he was, how old he took sannyas? 24. And then things changed. He immediately became a traveling preacher. And he went all... He went south, and everywhere he went, he told everyone to chant Hare Krishna in such a powerful way that even the people he met became so empowered that they told others. But he was traveling. He was the Pariprajakacharya. And then he came back and stayed in Vrindavan. But his staying in Vrindavan was broken into two parts. The first part was that his devotees would come and he would relish Krishna Katha in a holy place with his followers and chant Hare Krishna. They would chant and chant and chant, and they would had different pastimes, and they would speak about Krishna together like that. And then in the final part of his life, what's described as very intense ecstasy, as Kaviraj Goswami describes, and that is called like Nirjan Bhajan. He was alone with a few very intimate personalities, and then he himself deeply, deeply, deeply relished. But he went through these different stages of preaching,
in different ways and being in the association of devotees in different ways. So he is therefore, his life was the ideal of the preacher of the Bhagavatam. So what type of mercy is bestowed? He set the perfect example. He said, when the teacher coming to show how to learn the lesson, he's acting as if he is a student. So he sets the perfect example. And it was filled with the same process of religion, hearing and chanting. And Prabhupada therefore said, if one does not preach sufficiently when he is young, he will not be able to do nirjan bhajan when he is older. And then to make the point about hearing and chanting being really the essence of what... Anyway, she's Kunti Devi now says the next verse. Shunvanti gayanti grananti abhikshasha smaranti nandanti tavehi tamjana ta eva pasyanti acharena tavakam bhava pavo hoparam mam padambujam. O Krishna, those who continuously hear, chant, and repeat your transcendental activities, or take pleasure in others doing so, certainly see your lotus feet, which alone can stop the repetition of birth and death. O Krishna, those who continuously hear, chant, and repeat your transcendental activities, or take pleasure in others doing so, certainly see your lotus feet, which alone can stop the repetition of birth and death. Here is Prabhupada. The Supreme Lord Sri Krishna cannot be seen by our present conditional vision. In order to see him, one has to change his present vision by developing a different condition of life full of spontaneous love of Godhead. That's the natural condition. We have to be in our natural consciousness again to be with Krishna. When Sri Krishna was personally present on the face of the globe, not everyone could see him as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Materialists like Ravana, Hiranyakashipu, Kamsa, Jarasandha, Shishupal were highly qualified personalities by acquisitions of material assets, but they were unable to appreciate the presence of the Lord. Therefore, even though the Lord may be present before our eyes, it is not possible to see him unless we have the necessary vision. This necessary qualification is developed by the process of devotional service only, beginning with hearing about the Lord from the right sources. The Bhagavad Gita is one of the popular literatures which are generally heard, chanted, and repeated, etc., by the people in general. But in spite of such hearing, etc., sometimes it is experienced that the performer of such devotional service does not see the Lord eye to eye. The reason is that the first item, Shravana, is very important. If hearing is from the right sources, it acts very quickly. Generally, people hear from unauthorized persons. Such unauthorized persons may be very learned by academic qualifications, but because they do not follow the principles of devotional service, hearing from them becomes a sheer waste of time. Sometimes the texts are interpreted fashionably to suit their own purposes. Therefore, first one should select a competent and bona fide speaker and then hear from him. When the hearing process is perfect and complete, the other processes become automatically perfect in their own way. There are different transcendental activities of the Lord, and each and every one of them is competent to bestow the desired result, provided the hearing process is perfect. In the Bhagavatam, the activities of the Lord begin from his dealing with the Pandavas. There are many other pastimes of the Lord in connection with his dealings with the Asuras and others. And in the 10th canto, the sublime dealings with his conjugal associates, the gopis, as well as with his married wives at Dwarka, are mentioned. Since the Lord is absolute, there is no difference in the transcendental nature in each and every dealing of the Lord. But sometimes people, in an unauthorized hearing process, take more interest in hearing about his dealings with the gopis. Such an inclination indicates the lusty feelings of the hearer. So a bona fide speaker of the dealings of the Lord never indulges in such hearings. One must hear about the Lord from the very beginning, as in the Srimad Bhagavatam or any other scriptures, and that will help the hearer attain perfection by progressive development. One should not therefore consider that his dealings with the Pandavas are less important than his dealings with the gopis. We must always remember that the Lord is always transcendental to all mundane attachment. In all the above mentioned dealings of the Lord, he is the hero in all circumstances, and hearing about him or about his devotees or combatants is conducive to spiritual life. It is said that the Vedas and Puranas are all made to revive our lost relation with him. Hearing of all these scriptures is essential. Now, I would like to read one more verse and in this way enter into the next section. Because Kunti Devi has completed some glorification of Krishna, and now she will reveal her mind. She will explain what she's truly fearing and what her desire is. So we'll read the first of the verses. In Prabhupada's purport to this verses, there is one point that I would like to emphasize. That question, and it comes up in my mind all the time, how much are we supposed to depend on Krishna? And what does that mean? Because really we're supposed to completely depend on Krishna. So what does it mean? Does it mean that we think that if Krishna wants me to eat, not only will he provide the food, but he'll open my mouth and move my teeth for me so that I don't even have to chew, and anything other than that will be full dependence on Krishna, won't be full dependence on Krishna? What does it actually mean? So Prabhupada, in a sentence here, in relationship to the Pandavas, will explain clearly and definitively how great devotees fully depend on Krishna. But that is not the subject of the verse. But we'll get to that. So Kunti Devi is now going to express her heart and what she fears. And in these prayers, the love will really come out. Or will come out more. Kunti Devi says, "O my Lord, you have executed all duties yourself. Are you leaving us today, though we are completely dependent on your mercy and have no one else to protect us, now when all kings are at enmity with us?" The Pandavas are most fortunate because with all good luck, they were entirely dependent on the mercy of the Lord. Most fortunate, all fortunate, their life was checkered with disasters. They were put from one difficulty to the next, to the next, to the next, to the next. They were thrown out of their kingdom. They were kings, and they couldn't even get a village to rule. They had to fight continuously. They had to live incognito, in disguise. But yet, they are most fortunate because they were entirely dependent on the mercy of the Lord. And truly, that is the only way to be fortunate in this world and to feel oneself fortunate in this world and to become eligible to leave this world to go to the spiritual world. If we want to be peaceful, if we want to be happy, if we want to feel ourselves fortunate, we have to depend on the fortune of the Lord, on the mercy of the Lord, and accept His mercy in whatever form it comes.
very difficult to do this. Jivatiyo muktipade sadayabak. And just by doing this one thing, one is eligible to go back to the kingdom of God. Tateyunu kampam. Who speaks that verse? What chapter? 10:14. 8 verse? Once Prabhupada said this verse was the secret of Krishna consciousness. But what about my situation? I have this problem, I have that problem, and this bad thing happens to me, and I can't do this, and I have this and this. Maybe it's true for others, maybe it's true for the Pandavas. Is it true for me? What do you think? Thank you. It's true for everyone, in every circumstance, whether we're big or small, if we're in a circumstance that we like or in a circumstance that we don't like, if we see so many people in better circumstances than us, so many people in worse circumstances, but it doesn't make any difference. The Pandavas are most fortunate because with all good luck, they were entirely dependent on the mercy of the Lord. In the material world, to be dependent on the mercy of someone else is the utmost sign of misfortune. No one goes to the university to learn how to become a servant so you can work for someone else. Although actually speaking, everyone goes to the university and that's what they learn. How to become, as Prabhupada would say, the dog. You get your degree and then you have to go begging someone and you're at the mercy of the boss, the master. But in the case of our transcendental relation with the Lord, it is the most fortunate case when we can live completely dependent upon Him. The material disease is due to thinking of becoming independent of everything. But to be independent of everything, one has to have unlimited power and control. And to have unlimited power, or you have to be in control. And to be in control, you need unlimited power. So that's the struggle in the material world. Who's going to amass the most money? Because the most money means power. You can control. And therefore you're independent. You're under no one's control. So it's just straight envy of Krishna and position. The material disease is due to thinking of becoming independent of everything. But the cruel material nature does not allow us to become independent. The false attempt to become independent of the stringent laws of nature is known as the material advancement of experimental knowledge. The whole material world is moving on this false attempt of becoming independent of the laws of nature. All the science to control nature, science is meant for that. We will conquer nature. Well, not yet. Beginning from Ravana, who wanted to prepare a direct staircase to the planets of heaven, down to the present age, they're trying to overcome the laws of nature. They're trying now to approach distant planetary systems by electronic mechanical power. But the highest goal of human civilization is to work hard under the guidance of the Lord and become completely dependent upon Him. The highest achievement of perfect civilization is to work with valor, but at the same time depend completely on the Lord. The Pandavas were the ideal executors of this stand. There it is. That was the point I was aiming at. Work hard with valor, with integrity. What does valor mean? Huh? Yes, courage. Yeah, is initiative in there? I think so. Yeah. Very, huh? With vigor, integrity. With, what was the word you used? So many things, encourage, enthusiasm, valorous, strength, boldness, huh? Yes. Yes, full-hearted determination,
confidence. So this is the highest goal of human civilization. I'll read these two sentences again. Four. The highest goal of human civilization is to work hard under the guidance of the Lord and become completely dependent on Him. The highest achievement of perfect civilization is to work with valor, but at the same time depend completely on the Lord. The Pandavas were the ideal executors of this standard of civilization. Undoubtedly, they were completely dependent on the goodwill of Lord Sri Krishna, but they were not idle parasites of the Lord. They were all highly qualified, both by personal character and by physical activities. Still, they always looked for the mercy of the Lord, because they knew that every living being is dependent by constitutional position. The perfection of life is, therefore, to become dependent on the will of the Lord instead of becoming falsely independent in the material world.
I remember years ago I read Tamal Krishnaraj's book, TKG's Diary, about Prabhupada. Raise your hand if you've read that. Very, very interesting. Wonderful. But there was one point where Prabhupada was, he was basically bones. It was in, well within the last year of his life. Practically couldn't sit up. And he was talking about traveling around the world and preaching and doing this and doing that. And his spirit, his body had given up completely, but his spirit was indomitable with valor. Practically speaking, my conclusion after reading that was that Prabhupada's preaching spirit was his ecstasy. It was his ecstasy. He so much wanted, he was so obsessed with the idea of spreading Krishna consciousness to every town and village of the world, letting everyone hear about Krishna, hear Krishna's names, read Krishna's books, and smashing the demonic forces of the world. He was obsessed with this idea. And it was his ecstasy to do that. He was such a valiant warrior. That was his ecstasy. It was the expression of his love for Krishna. But yet, he was fully dependent. The perfection of life is therefore to become dependent on the will of the Lord instead of becoming falsely independent in the material world. Those who try to become falsely independent of the Lord are called anatta. What does anatta mean in Hindi?
No father,
an orphan. Like nath means Lord, anat, an orphan. So everyone in the material world who is trying to become independent, they're orphans, and they suffer the lack of love that orphans often find in their life. Or without any guardian, whereas those who are completely dependent on the will of the Lord are called sanata, or those who have someone to protect them. They are well loved and well cared for. Therefore, we must try to be sanat, so that we can always be protected from the unfavorable condition of material existence. By the deluding power of the external material nature, we forget that the material condition of life is the most undesirable perplexity. The Bhagavad Gita therefore directs us in 7:19 that after many, many births, one fortunate person becomes aware of the fact that Vasudeva is all in all, and the best way of leading one's life is to surrender unto him completely. That is the sign of a Mahatma. All the members of the Pandava family were Mahatmas in household life. Maharaj Yudhisthira was the head of these Mahatmas, and Queen Kunti Devi was the mother. The lessons of the Bhagavad Gita and all the Puranas, specifically the Bhagavata Purana, are therefore inevitably connected with the history of the Pandava Mahatmas.
For them, separation from the Lord was just like the separation of a fish from water. Srimati Kunti Devi, therefore, felt such separation like a thunderbolt. And the whole prayer of the queen is to try to persuade the Lord to stay with them. After the battle of Kurukshetra, although the inimical kings were killed, their sons and grandsons were still there to deal with the Pandavas. It is not only the Pandavas who were put into the condition of enmity, but all of us are always in such a condition. And the best way of living is to become completely dependent on the will of the Lord and thereby overcome all difficulties of Krishna willing, tomorrow we will finish reading the prayers of Kunti Devi. Hare Krishna. Questions, comments? It seemed like that from one of the purports. Yes. Yes, that's so there. I thought I read something like that in one of the purports too, but I don't understand how it's so, because Duryodhana had been killed. Maybe there was something a little bit. I don't know. I don't know what officially. Yeah. That was for the kids. I don't know. But it also could be, sometimes there's difference in the versions of the Mahabharata and the Bhagavatam. But it seems from the Bhagavatam that it is. But there may be more that I'm not aware of. But I've also heard that. Any other? Huh? Yes, that's actually, yes. In the 13th verse of this chapter, the 8th chapter, it's talking about that point. Prabhupada says in his purport, the Pandavas were 100% dependent on the protection of the Lord, although they were the greatest warriors themselves. When the Lord saw that there was no time for the Pandavas to counteract the Brahmastra of Asatama, he took up his weapon even at the risk of breaking his own vow. Although the battle of Kurukshetra was almost finished, still according to his vow, he should not have taken up his own weapon, but the emergency was more important than the vow. He is thus better known as the Bhakta Vatsal, or the lover of his devotee, and thus he preferred to continue his Bhakta Vatsal than to be a worldly moralist who never breaks his solemn vow. So Prabhupada says that in the purport, but it's not exactly clear to me how. Any other questions? Did you have any? Yeah. As long as he was alive. There weren't very many people left, though. These Kshatriyas, right? Yes. Yes. Bishop Cardinal Sin. What a funny name. Yes. Yes. Without looking at it from the point of view of Sanskrit, just looking at it from the point of view of Prabhupada's constant mood, repeating would mean more like preaching, repeating to others while chanting. When you're chanting Hare Krishna, you're chanting out loud, but you're just doing your part of chanting. You're hearing and chanting. But repeating, I would think, could easily mean to others. But of course, that's kirtan also. Yeah. And automatically by repeating, you're remembering. You have to remember after you hear something to repeat it. One has to remember it first. And There's many places where it's described, and all teachers know the fact that when you're teaching or repeating a message, you benefit more than anyone else. First of all, for one reason, if no other reason, everyone else can fall asleep, but you have to stay awake because you're talking. But you have to hear what you're saying. And then you see also that Krishna's allowing you to say things that you didn't really know that you knew before, even things like that. So repeating and preaching is such an important part of the Krishna consciousness movement. Preaching. Did you want to add something? Yes. What did you conclude? Yeah, that's a really nice concept in there, isn't it? Is that in the Sanskrit? Where is the people in general, that the jana? Well, where is that in the translation? In the translation, the English translation. So that's the people, the others, the people in general doing it. And the people who do this, who continuously hear, chant, and repeat your transcendental activities, or take pleasure in others doing so, in other words, that can be looked at in many ways too, not envious of others doing it, or being, or listening to others as they are doing it. Certainly see your lotus feet, which alone can stop the repetition of birth and death. How wonderful. Any other points or questions or comments?
On this point,
yes.
One Mandoka equates Kirtanam with explaining. He says, hearing is called Shravanam and explaining is called Kirtanam. One can assimilate the love of God is equated with two.
Yes.
One one six four.
Thank you. That's one way he shows mercy. Okay, you're going to have to say it again louder. Yes. We have to see that there is some mercy. And although we might not be able to see clearly what that mercy is, Krishna is all merciful. The mercy may not be to us, though, directly. And that's the sad part, because we're forced to miss his association so dearly, and see if we can find some mercy in it. But say, for example, and it's going to come up very, very soon with Kunti Devi and Krishna, is Krishna, he's going to leave Hastinapur. And the people in Hastinapur and Krishna's association, are they happy or are they sad? They're happy. But how about the people in Dwarka? When Krishna's in his Hastinapur, the people in Dwarka are crying and crying and crying, and they're like lifeless bodies. So when Krishna leaves Hastinapur, it's the people in Hastinapur's turn to cry. And the people in Dwarka's turn
for life to come back to their body and for them to be ecstatic. So, I don't know if it's appropriate to say that sometimes I don't appreciate Krishna's judgments in these things, but I have to accept that that he's all merciful. And maybe he wants something a little special from us too by that, that there's some special mercy for us too within it all. We're going to see the same thing, and we'll hear Prabhupada's purports about Bhishmadev too. And not only that, Prickit Maharaj. These are the questions that were asked. How could Prickit Maharaj have renounced his kingdom? Maybe he was completely detached. But there were so many countless citizens dependent fully upon him. So how could Krishna have let this happen to Vishnu Arta, who he had protected personally within the womb? How could he have allowed this curse to take place? How could he allow Chituketu to become cursed, to become a demon? Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur answers that question by saying that Krishna wanted to bring him back to Vaikuntha very quickly. But how about all of us who are left behind? You know that feeling when someone is... Well, you don't get the feeling so much because you're living here in Vrindavan. But when you're in the West and you're taking someone to the airport and they're getting on the plane to come to Vrindavan, they're leaving their situation and they're never unhappy. But as soon as they leave, everyone who's at the airport, it's really hard to be left behind. It's really hard to be left behind. You know that feeling at the airports when you've taken someone you have affectionate to the airport and they leave for Vrindavan or something, and there you are, and then they're left and the excitement's gone and the last smiling as they're walking through customs and immigration, and then there you are, left behind. It is sad. This will be discussed, this point will be discussed later too, in the 19th chapter, when Prickit Maharaj has to go through this 18th and 19th chapter, and we'll get it a little bit with Bhishmadev. But I think there is no consolation that words can give in philosophy. But at least we can think that although we've been left behind crying and sad, but there are other people happy in, to have that association and afford, if that's a concept. Huh?
The feeling of being left behind.
Yes? But the least pleasant. But it's just going through the middle. That's the hard part. And the middle can be very long. But I fully cherish that, the misery. Because in that there is sweetness. Guard it very carefully. But it's not fun. Also, you're dealing with ultimately, you're dealing with the master of these type of things, with Krishna. Look what he did. He knows how to extract rasa. He knows how to bring water and tears from stones. What to speak of soft-hearted. Anyone else like to comment on this delicate? talk a little louder though. What is painful in this world? That is what is painful. Karuna ras. Then the question is, were the gopis satisfied with that answer? You're like at Kurukshetra.
He didn't have a choice.
He said yes, but he brought the not at Kurukshetra, but he brought the letter from Uddhava. Just by meditating upon me, you'll experience with me. And the gopis, of course, what a great idea. Now we're fully satisfied. Thank you so much.
The thing is this, that he said, be satisfied with your love. Another unique verse in that same section, the exact same word. He said it by hearing. So that's the ego be satisfied? No.
Mataji, what to do?
And
I said, yeah, thanks. Thanks a lot.
They didn't have a choice.